Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
Well, hello everybody and welcome. This is episode number 146 of Linux in the Ham Shack. And this is kind of a special episode we have for you today. A pre-recorded interview with Christian Jacobs. Christian Jacobs is a software developer and a postdoctorate student at Imperial College of London. He's done a lot of work with fluid dynamics and a lot of work with Python. He also happens to be a ham radio operator, and he has written code called PyQSO, which is a logging application for ham radio written in Python. And we are going to talk to Christian and get all the information you ever wanted to know about PyQSO and about Christian Jacobs. If after this interview you're interested in getting in touch with Christian or just want to find out more about him, his website is christianjacobs.uk and his email address is c.jacobs10@imperial.ac.uk. And of course, all of his contact information will be in the show notes. We hope you enjoy this interview. And without further ado, our pre-recorded interview with Christian Jacobs, Imperial College London and writer of PyQSO. Welcome everybody to our first, I think, ever video segment since like 2007, when we actually did this show as a video podcast, which didn't really work out that well. But our guest tonight suggested that we do this via Google Hangout, so that's what we're doing. We have a few viewers who are watching, and I believe I have the Q&A module enabled here, so if anybody has any questions for our guest, you feel free to go ahead and ask them. So I guess I should introduce our guest. Our guest is a man by the name of Christian Jacobs, who's a very, very smart individual from London in the UK. And I'll read some of his accolades here. Well, actually, you know what? I can't read some of your accolades. So guess what? You can tell us about all your accolades. Because I read your brag tape there on your website, christianjacobs.uk. And, you are a postdoc who has a lot of very cerebral topics under his belt. So why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself before we get into what we're really here to talk about?
Yeah, sure thing. So very broadly then, I'm a scientist working at a university called Imperial College in London. And basically a large part of what I do is sort of developing and using software to simulate fluid flow. So this kind of ranges from sort of the flow of hot gas and ash from volcanic eruptions all the way through to sort of marine tidal energy simulations. So there's a whole sort of range of things that I do with regards to sort of geophysical flow simulations. And aside from sort of the software development and the science side of things, I also teach sort of an undergraduate course in Python programming. So a large part of what I do involves Linux, open source software, and software development. A brief introduction.
Yeah, well, so apparently you do some Python teaching while you're slumming away from the rest of your... apparently very active life. And it occurs to me that fluid dynamics is one of those topics that is stereotypically put up there along with rocket science when it comes to things in the scientific community. It's when anything that involves a lot of chaos and randomness and things that are very difficult to understand, rank at the top of the list, rocket science and fluid dynamics being there. And I've see that you've written you've done a lot of work in Python for actual work in fluid dynamics for it looked like actually modeling with Python.
Yeah, so I use basically a Python based language called UFL, the Unified Form Language, And this kind of fits in with the whole idea that you can sort of specify the equations that describe the physical system that you want to solve. You can describe them in this unified form language. And then eventually that kind of gets compiled down into sort of very low level C code, rather than sort of the scientists having to write low level C code themselves. So that's kind of where Python fits into sort of my modeling work, really.
So the unified form language, is that something, is that like a module or is that a class that's built into Python, or is that something you've added to it?
No, this is something that's been developed initially by, I think it was Simula Labs in Norway, as well as a couple of other collaborations internationally. It's not something that I developed, no, but I think it is based on Python. It uses Python as its kind of host language. It's basically kind of its own language in itself. It's just Python based, really.
All right, excellent. And I do see that we probably should talk about your most interesting project, which is the Python program that you've written to collect the information about the Senior Common Room's daily menu at London. I mean, that is clearly your best work. So maybe you can tell us
about that. I love the food in that place. I have to admit, big shout out to the Senior Common Room chefs there. They actually do a really good job keeping me fed during lunchtime there. And it's always one of these things. What we do every Wednesday, we have a developers meeting, and sort of the very last thing on the agenda is what is for lunch. And I'm always curious. So I thought, well, why not write a smartphone out so I can sort of check at the end of the meeting and then decide what I'm going to have before I arrive.
Excellent. I saw today that they're having duck, or they had duck, I guess. This is in the past now. So
fantastic. It's my favorite then.
So you weren't there for that? You didn't get it?
I wasn't there for that today, no.
Oh, that's apparently too bad. But it sounds like the menu will be just as good tomorrow, so you can't complain, right? All right, so I guess we should move on from this esoterica and talk a little bit about PyQSO.
Sure, yeah.
Which is something I didn't know about until probably, a month or two ago, and I can't remember how I found it. It may be something that you tweeted about or someone else did, and we dug it up. And we're always looking for good logging applications on this program. So finding another one out there is always great to take a look at. And this one is nice because it's written in Python, which means it ostensibly can run on any platform that supports Python, which ostensibly is any platform, because Python is very versatile and very multi-platform. I was actually going to try and show off my capabilities here by being able to demonstrate it running on a Macintosh, but I didn't get a chance to get that complete. But it should work without too much effort. I know some of the libraries that it uses, the Python modules, would probably have to be built from the Python source and everything, because my installation was on a Debian-based system. And most of the things that PyQSO requires to run are already built as Debian modules. So that's really easy that way. I have a feeling Macintosh wasn't gonna give it to me quite that easily, but I ran out of time. So do you know of anybody who's running it on a Mac, out of curiosity? Just to start off with a weird random question.
I don't. I've only ever heard of users using it on Linux. Like in theory, it should work. It is cross-platform, but I've never actually tested it on anything other than Linux. I myself use Ubuntu and Linux Mint, but I've also tested it on Debian systems as well. But,
well, that's
never anything else.
That's handy for me because those are the ones I happen to use as well. So I like the fact that you. As you use the same tools and everything that I do, which is, works out for me. And it also works out for the listeners of this program who happen to take our advice because they also will be using Debian or some variant thereof, and therefore getting PyQSO to work will be very easy for them. But let's kind of jump back and start at the beginning. So in all this postdoctoral work that you've done, and you know, after your thesis and all this crazy stuff you do with fluid dynamics, so why did you bring yourself down to the level of creating a Python-based logger for ham radio? Surely you don't have enough time in your life to fit this into your pursuits.
Well, actually, all of this started during sort of towards the end of the second year of my PhD. And sort of, yeah, before then, I didn't really know anything about amateur radio. And basically, my flatmate at the time, Simon, Mike Six, Charlie Yankee Papa, he basically stumbled across this video on amateur radio. And we both thought, hey, like that looks like a pretty cool hobby. And we ended up signing up for like a course together. We finished our foundation course at the end of sort of 2012. And then shortly afterwards, I started work on PyQSO purely for fun in sort of the very little spare time I had. It was just something to sort of, yeah, learn a bit more about Python. I would consider it to be my favorite language. And yeah, it was just a bit of fun, really. In terms of the ham radio stuff that I do, it's usually just sort of casual contacts through repeaters or just casual 2 meter, 70 centimeters contacts. And only recently have I moved sort of onto HF. So sort of the design behind PyQSO was meant to be sort of, you know, a very simple logging application. I wasn't really sort of into contesting or anything like that, anything too advanced. So I just decided to keep it as simple as possible and sort of, yeah, make a very sort of lightweight logger.
Was there something about existing loggers that you didn't like or that you didn't see that you wanted to put into yours? Or was it just basically an expression of a thought exercise to see if you could put together a logger in Python?
Pretty much the latter. I had tried Xlog, and yeah, I mean, there's probably people out there thinking, oh, why didn't you just sort of help to debug or extend Xlog? But at the end of the day, I just fancied a challenge, really, just for fun, just for learning.
Okay, well, that's great, and I'm glad there's the project out there. Extending Xlog might have been, you know, a worthwhile pursuit, but the thing about Xlog is it's kind of beholden to the X Windows environment. It's not not as cross-platform, not as easily cross-platform as PyQSO is. So that's one benefit to PyQSO. I do like the very simple interface. I assume you used the GTK libraries for
drawing? Yeah, it's in GTK. Yeah.
Okay. So maybe just run us through some of the basic features of the application. And, you know, everybody's sort of familiar with what loggers do, but, maybe explain how you put it together, you know, to fit your workflow.
Sure. Yeah. So the back end is based on an SQL database, based on SQLite. And I have a bit of experience with that already, which is why I chose it. And yeah, I mean, there were certain tools that I found more useful, like the Grayline tool and having sort of the DX cluster up there, sort of all in a very sort of compact space. You just sort of click on a button and there it is. You don't have to sort of go through any complicated menus. I wanted to sort of have the main tools that you want at your fingertips kind of thing. And at the same time, like, just to allow other users to sort of benefit, I added in ADIF support just so they could sort of transfer, you know, maybe one day they got bored of PyQSO or maybe one day they wanted to try it out. There's always that kind of cross-program interoperability that ADIF offers. So right. I introduced support for that.
All right. So one of the features that I've noticed in PyQSO that's presented immediately that isn't present in other loggers that I've tried, or it's not immediately present in other loggers I've tried, is the ability to have multiple logbooks inside your main window. So that if you want to separate out digital from phone, or if you want to separate out HF from VHF or something like that, you can do that, and multiple logbooks, and they're all stored in the same SQLite database. So on the back end, you don't see the difference, but when you load your .sql file, or however you choose to save it, they're split out in a way, and you don't have to split them out. You can only have one if you want. But I find being able to split them out so that I can easily see if my contact was made on Echolink or VHF or HF or something like that, which is the way I split them out, is really handy. And I also do some network, like for Workdal States Nets and DX Nets and stuff like that, and it's kind of nice to split those out as well. So when I export them from the loggers that they use, I can import them into this and have them split out so I know where the originals came from and everything. So why did you throw that in when other loggers don't seem to do it?
Yeah, I think I threw it in really because I thought one day I hope to take the intermediate license, and it would be nice to sort of have all of the contacts that I made under my M6, my foundation license call sign, just sort of keep those in the same place alongside the ones that I make on the intermediate license and perhaps one day the full license. But also, really, my first radio was just, you know, very simple handheld Baofeng UV5R. Yeah, got it. Yeah, there it is. I usually just go out pedestrian mobile and just talk to people through the local repeaters. So any mobile contacts I make, I usually prefer to sort of keep those in a separate log to the ones I make at home. I guess those were sort of the two main reasons I wanted that personally in my logbook program. Yeah.
So to kind of move away from this just for a second, the foundation license in Great Britain, what privileges does that actually give you as far as operating?
So we're able to operate on almost all the frequencies that a full license holder would be able to. Its main restriction is the output power that you're allowed to use. So it's basically 10 watts on most frequencies. And when you go to the intermediate, you get 50 watts, and then the full license is 400. So its main difference is in the power.
So you are able to operate in on HF with the foundation license, but only at 10 watts maximum?
Yeah.
Okay. So because I'm not sure why I asked that question. I had somewhere I was going with that, but I've already forgotten. So let's just move on. Logging of VHF contacts is something that almost no one does anymore that I'm aware of. But you say you still do it when you're out walking around with your handheld?
Yeah, I have a little notebook with me. And usually I just sort of, yeah, if I'm out and about in the countryside, what I do is I usually go to the top of a tall hill, sit down on a bench there just for a couple of hours with some lunch and just have my handheld there just talking to people just locally. I mean, probably the furthest contacts I've got on VHF is probably only about 30 or 40 miles away from on top of this hill. But yeah, it's good fun to sort of chat to people locally as well as worldwide on the Yaesu FT897 that I've got next to me here on HF.
All right. Well, I don't necessarily know every feature that the software application has and doesn't have, but I did not see any Hamlib integration. So you don't have any rig control or ability to read data from your set.
There's a limited amount of Hamlib integration, so you can get it to read in the frequency that your radio is currently set to. And that's the only thing that you're able to do at the moment. Okay. with Hamlib. That's not something that I actually use myself, but I just thought I'd put it in because I know that it is a very popular library, and I thought that people might like that. I mean, it's also the reason why, like the limited amount of support there is also a reason why there's only a limited amount of support for awards tracking. I just sort of put it in to see whether users might like to see more of that, or I don't actually collect awards myself. I just thought I'd put it in just to see how the community would react, whether they want sort of more of that stuff or whether they might find it useful. I wasn't really sure.
Have you had feedback one way or the other on either of those?
Yeah, I've had feedback from one user in particular. I knew that he would have liked to see sort of more awards added. So this is something that I'll look at in the future. Again, as I said, like, it's not something that I usually do. So I'd have to look into sort of all the sort of rules behind these awards in a bit more detail.
All right. So a couple of the other features that the program has, and one of which I want to maybe touch on at length, since we've already talked about it at length. The first one is the DX cluster, which is nice. I love having a DX cluster built in. I talked to some folks at a local Hamfest a couple of weeks ago that I was at, and they call DX clusters cheating. But that's quite all right as far as I'm concerned. I like having that information at my fingertips, because even if you know that someone's at a certain place, you still have to be able to work them. So it's not really, you know, totally cheating. But I like that it's integrated into the bottom window pane of PyQSO. All you have to do is turn it on and log into, pick your favorite DX cluster, and you have that scrolling by as you're doing your logging, which is nice. And then there's the troublesome gray line, module, which, when it works is a great feature. And it was funny because, the first time I used PyQSO, I was doing some HF work and I was trying to make a contact with, I can't remember the call sign, but I think it was a Zulu Sierra in, South Africa. And I had the gray line module open and I was watching the gray line, but I wasn't paying attention to it. I was seeing it, but I wasn't interpreting it. And finally the pileup started to dissipate and I was going to jump in, and apparently the gray line went over Lesotho or South Africa or wherever it was, and his signal was gone instantaneously. which is too bad, because I had the information there in front of me to say that he was about to disappear, but I wasn't paying any attention to it.
I think it updates. I've got it set to update every half an hour. At the moment, that also might be a thing I might want to change in the preferences. Let the user decide how often they want that updated.
All right, that might be useful, but another thing would be to make it work consistently, because we still have that little problem.
I'm honestly not sure. Like, when I logged into your machine, I couldn't see anything obviously wrong with the setup. As I said before, like on a fresh install of Debian 8, it seems to work okay, but we'll need to get to the bottom of that, because it shouldn't be like that. It shouldn't just be blank.
No, and on my other machine, I have you can see two screens behind me here. This one right here is the one that you are connected to that doesn't work. This one over here is one where it does work. So
okay.
But I will say, don't do this, folks. If you're watching this, don't call up Christian and say, hey, can you debug my machine? But he was nice enough to actually, connect to my machine remotely from London and take a look at my setup and try and debug it. Which was unsuccessful, but, I don't think, I'm going to say, you know, he does not offer this amount of tech support to the general public, unless you want to. I'm going to assume you don't want to do that.
I'm happy to help wherever I can. It's just the amount of spare time I have.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, Gray Line is a very useful feature. And when it works, it's very nice. So we want to get down to a few more of the features, one of which is it has call sign database lookup, which is great. However, you use QRZ.com. Which I disapprove of. I believe you have to work in HamQTH integration.
This is this is something that's been on the wish list now for actually about a year. I would like to integrate HamQTH support, which I think will actually be quite straightforward to do. It's just a matter of me getting around to doing it. I think the reason I chose QRZ.com in the first place, back when I started developing PyQSO in 2012, just because that was sort of the main one I had heard of at the time. But yeah, I would be very interested in integrating HAMQTH support eventually. It's just a matter of time, really.
No, I understand the limited amount of time, but it's good to hear that you're actually thinking about integrating HAMQTH.com. Now,
yeah, there's an issue on the issue tracker on the PyQSO homepage. So if any listeners are interested to hear sort of where that's going to go, hopefully I'll update it as I sort of go along with the integration, so they can see sort of how far away it is and when it will next be released.
All right, that's excellent. But what I was going to say is, I hope that when you integrate HAMQTH, that you will leave QRZ.com in there, because choice is good. And what just because I don't particularly like QRZ.com, other people do. And
no, absolutely, yeah.
One thing I have noticed, though, is when I do the lookups on most of the call signs that I have logged in PyQSO, the bottom part of the information where it has the name QTH and all that and stuff, when you do the lookup, is populated. However, the DXCC, ITU zone, and DX zones, and those rarely, if ever, I think, populate. Is that a function of the data that comes out of QRZ, or is it because you're not reading those fields?
That's a good question. I am not sure if PyQSO. I think it does read in the fields, as far as I remember, but I would have to check that.
Because I'm not sure that information is published on every QRZ.com profile. I haven't even bothered to look at my own to see if that information is there. But I know I've logged probably 200 or 300 contacts in PyQSO, and I don't think any of them have ever shown that information in the lookup. So, and that seems unusual if that information is, you know, supposed to be there.
Yeah, no, I think PyQSO is supposed to read that in, but if it's still blank, it probably means the user hasn't supplied it. But yeah, it's something I'll have to check.
Okay, now when I've been using PyQSO, I have been doing everything sort of with mouse clicks. You know, there's the ability to add and edit fields and everything using the buttons across the top. Do you, and I haven't bothered to read the help file, and that's why you're here, because I'm asking you. You're going to be my help file. So do you have keyboard shortcuts for doing any of that stuff, like starting a log entry or anything along those lines?
Yeah, there are keyboard shortcuts. Like, for example, if you do Control N, you can start a new log. I think if it's Control R, it will give you a new QSO window, basically a new record window, which is what the R stands for there. Similarly, Control O will allow you to open up the logbook file. So yeah, there's a couple in there to help out. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's good, because I like keyboard shortcuts. I like, you know, being able to use the mouse, but I actually haven't used a mouse in 20 years. I only use trackballs because mice are horribly inefficient. But that being said, I love being able to just kind of have one hand on the keyboard doing everything with one hand on the mic or, you know, whatever. So having to use two hands for the computer operation is kind of a pain.
Sure.
Is that stuff documented in the help file that comes along with it?
It's not, no. No, I mean, yeah, to find out the keyboard shortcuts, you'll basically have to go into the menu, and they should be next to the menu text. But no, I don't think it's documented. I know some of the keyboard shortcuts are documented, but not all of them in the online documentation.
Do you have a wiki or something, or a help page off the website, other than the basic instructions?
There's PyQSO.readthedocs.org, and yeah, that's the only sort of available help website that I have for PyQSO at the moment. It's all sort of automatically generated using the Sphinx system, and yeah, I need to sort of update that as I go along, really. I'll provide a full list of the keyboard shortcuts on a separate page. I think that'll be pretty helpful.
Okay, I'm looking at the documentation at pyqso.readthedocs.org, and some, if not all, of the keyboard shortcuts are in fact documented in there, so that's good. It actually looks like a pretty reasonable set of documentation, because Pike USO is not a complicated program. It really is intuitive and doesn't require a lot of brain power to get up and running. But there is a good bit of information here on basic operation and even basic install of proper modules and things that you need to actually get it up and running, which is also nice. And let me take a look here under licensing. GNU public license. We all like to see GNU public license, so very good there. And let's see. So, as I roam around your documentation page, let's see, you have, let me just read some of the things you have here for the features. Sorting logs by individual fields. That is very nice. Not just having them in an order by the way you log them, but being able to see them by a call sign or whatever. That's very cool. Printing to hard copy or PDF. That's a nice feature. Filtering based on call sign field. Always useful. A dupe checker. That's nice. I haven't actually used a dupe checker. Where is that in the application?
So if you go into records in the menu, and then it should be remove duplicate entries or remove duplicate records at the very bottom of the menu there. That's one of the things that doesn't actually have a keyboard shortcut yet.
Does it work across the multiple logbook sections, or is it only in the section you're in?
It's only in the section that you're in, so you'll have to do each one separately if you need to remove the duplicates from all of them.
All right. Probably wise, because if you have your contacts separated out, there's probably a reason.
Sure. One of the things that I'm not sure about, though, is actually how long it will take, because I've never actually done any kind of performance testing with PyQ. So I myself, as a relatively new ham, only have about 100-ish contacts in my log. So, and I've kind of tested PyQSO with a test log of about a couple of thousand entries, and that seems to be okay. But for sort of the more hardcore users of, you know, tens of thousands of contacts, I'm not sure how well PyQSO will behave there, whether it will be super slow or.
Well, sure. As long as it's faster than TuSnock doing score calculation, then you're fine, because the last time I loaded 95 contacts into TuSnock and had it calculate the score for the CQWPX contest, that's where I got this beard from. So it took just a little while. So you're probably good there. And I think, okay. I can't remember what TuSnock is written in, but I don't think it's Python. Anyway, let's see. Basic support for the HamLib library. We've already talked about that. Released under the GPL. And perform call sign lookups by QRZ.com and soon HamQTH.com. So excellent.
Yep.
So what have we not touched on PyQSO? Like I said, it's a fairly simple program, and it has a few bells and whistles, but it certainly does not throw in the kitchen sink. But have I missed anything?
I don't think so. No, I think those are the main features that we covered there. No, I don't think we've missed much. One thing I would like to add is that one feature that I would like to see in there pretty soon actually is the ability to have DX cluster bookmarks, because I find it pretty annoying every time I do actually want to load up the DX cluster, I actually have to type in the address of the DX cluster server and the port and the username and password. So a bookmark feature there is something that I hope to integrate pretty soon. I think that might also be on the issue tracker as well.
Might I suggest, if not only a bookmark feature, but perhaps a dropdown of oft-used DX clusters for those people Sure. who don't know where to find them, perhaps?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good idea. Yeah,
because I always use one, but the only reason I use it is because I can remember its URL, mm-hmm. and I would rather not have to go out and try and find another one. There may be a better one out there, but dxusa.net is the one that I use, which is a very good one. It seems to be very nice, and it's of course telnet based, or just serial console-based data transfer for that. So it's very simple and very easy to integrate with other applications. However, if you want a really great, full-featured DX cluster application that's web-based, and I'm kind of going a little afield here, but since we're talking about DX clusters, you should check out DX Heat.
Okay.
And I'm telling that to everybody, not just you. Let me see what it's dxheat.com. And all you do is you bring that web page up and you go to the DX cluster, and it is probably one of the single greatest DX tools I have ever seen. I mean, it gives you call sign lookup. It gives you a highly customizable DX cluster look. You can filter by band, mode, call sign, area, whatever. It gives you a propagation heat map, shows you where your signal is good into at any time on any band.
Nice.
It's just a super, super website. And we got to find the people who wrote that thing and talk to them, because it's great. I don't think there's anything open source about it, but for a wonderful tool, you can't beat it. I think it would be very hard to integrate into an application because it's very graphics rich and mm-hmm. Has all kinds of back end stuff in it. But yeah, very, very nice. I've been using that thing, and actually I'm looking at the propagation heat map right now for Europe, and according to this, Europe is open to everywhere right now. So if you want to get on HF, now might be the time. Yeah, wow. Apparently, Europe has great propagation, because I switched over to North America after that, and it's showing right now a wide open to South America on 6 meters and wide open to Europe on 17 with a somewhat of an opening on 15. And I've actually been listening to 15 meters today, and I've heard quite a few stations coming over here from Europe. I've heard Belgium, Netherlands, Germany, England, Turkey, all on 15 meters. So it's been quite a day for 15 meters. So you said you do some HF work. So what kind of HF work do you do? Like what bands do you like? What modes do you like?
Well, it's just voice really on 20 and 40. And that's for my simple setup here. That's pretty much all it can manage. I can't manage 80 meters with the setup that I have. I just have a very sort of basic dipole in the back garden here. And yeah, that's pretty much all I do. What I also like to do is receive SSTV signals. And I use a tool called SlowRx, which mm-hmm. was developed by someone in Finland, I think. I think her name is Una, and it's an open source piece of software developed in C, I think. So SlowRx is another tool I use just to receive SSTV, not to actually transmit. But yeah, it's something that I enjoy doing as well as just voice SSB.
Well, that's good. I'm going to have to try that one. We have mentioned SlowRx on the show, I think, once as an alternative to MMSSTV and QSSTV, which were other applications for doing slow scan. And I was actually trying to use slow scan TV or QSSTV for slow scan earlier today, but it's having some sort of issue with my rig. So
okay.
I'm going to have to try out SlowRx and see if I can get that to work. Cause I don't have any particular interest in transmitting slow scan, but I would certainly be like to, you know, decode it.
Yeah,
at some point.
I think what I also like about it is that I can just sort of load up any web SDR as well, and just change the sort of sound settings on the laptop, and just sort of get it to feed directly into SlowRx. So yeah, it's a pretty nice piece of software.
Good. I will check that out. So what other projects, now that you have PiQSO under your belt, do you plan on working on in the ham radio field? Do you have any ideas for things that you, anything stirring around in the attic upstairs that might come to fruition someday?
Not at the moment. No, I think right now I'd just like to concentrate on developing PyQSO a bit more. Obviously, like, we're still in early days. You know, it's got quite a bit of functionality, and sort of it has everything that I need for my sort of casual contacts. But no, I'd like to put a bit more effort into PyQSO for now, and then yeah, we'll see where things go from there. I do have a few more things sort of on the list that I would like to see. So for example, I know that on the summary page that you get with PyQSO, that's pretty bare at the moment. I would like to add some sort of more statistics there, maybe a graph of the number of QSOs that you get sort of throughout the year, perhaps. Also Python 3, sort of supporting over to Python 3 is something that I'd like to do eventually. Something that I'll probably have to do eventually. And also another feature that I would like to see is something that I know Xlog has already, which is when you punch in the start of somebody's call sign, it will show you a map of where that call sign is in the world, really. Just a few days ago, I actually made my first contact with Finland, with a station in Finland, and I was typing in OH as the start of the call sign, because I had no idea where that was. As I said, it's a relatively new ham, relatively new to HF. So I think a map would be pretty useful to have. Yeah.
Yep. All right. Sounds good. So are you the only developer of PyQSO? Just you working on it?
Yeah, I'm the only developer. Simon, who was, again, my flatmate at the time, he works with me now as a fellow postdoc. And he's quite a big user of PyQSO. So he's helped sort of give me feedback, give me sort of feature requests. So yeah, he's been pretty useful, as well as a couple of others around the world. I've received sort of patches, bug reports, stuff like that. But yeah, I'm the main developer of PyQSO at the moment.
All right, excellent. So it sounds like you've got some development tasks ahead of you, and that PyQSO will continue to improve over time. But for what you've got right now, I think it's a great basic logger. And of course, it's not designed to be a contest logger because you don't do any contesting. So if you want to use a contest logger, don't use PyQSO. But if you want a great, easy to use, simple logger that works ostensibly on any platform that can support Python, you might want to check that out. And I am personally looking forward to maybe some slightly better HamLib integration. The mapping would be great. I would love to see that. And it sounds like that's one that you really want to do for yourself as well. Mm, yep. So, all right then. So anything else? Again, I always like to ask, you know, if there's something you want to push, plug, or just, you know, remind me that I didn't talk about or anything like that before we let you go, because it's a little later for you than it is for me. I think you said you were UTC plus one, which puts it about 9 o'clock your time, I think, something like that.
Yeah, it's about, yeah, just approaching 9 o'clock now. But I think covered everything. I don't really have anything else to add, but thanks for having me on the show. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the show and talking to us about your program, PyQSO, because I know we have mentioned it on a couple of episodes, and I believe you responded to my initial complaint on Twitter, which is kind of how this all snowballed into an interview. But I'm glad you're willing to come and talk to us about it. We always like to have the people who write these software applications, particularly the ones that are open source and available to the world for free, and also available for future development. That's really the crux of what we do. And it's always nice to talk to the people who are really at the heart of those applications. So thank you very much for being here, Christian.
Yeah, my pleasure.
All right. Well, we're going to let you go, and then we're going to roll this video into the rest of our next program, and you'll hear yourself there. And of course, this will be published on YouTube as well, on our YouTube channel. So thanks everybody who watched us live, and we will let Christian go, and maybe we'll hear some updates from you in the future on the progress of PyQSO.
Yeah, sure. I'll keep you updated.
All right. Sounds good. Take care.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Bye now.
Bye. All right. There we go. Interview with Christian Jacobs of PiQSO. Thanks again, Christian, and look forward to hearing from you again soon about updates to the PiQSO program. So everybody should go check that out. It's at christianjacobs.uk/PiQSO. All right, and thanks everybody for listening to our interview with Christian Jacobs. That's c.jacobs10@imperial.ac.uk for more information. We want to thank Christian once again for spending some time with us and telling us all about himself and all about PiQSO. And if you want to check out any of that information, links will of course be provided in the show notes. And also, please check out our website. Our website is http://lhspodcast.info. You can become an ambassador of the show. You can visit our website to find out how you can do that. Represent us at a local ham fest or LinuxCon somewhere near you. You can email us feedback at info@lhspodcast.info. You can also leave us voice feedback at 1-909-LHS-SHOW. That's 1-909-547-7469. You can find us on IRC on the Freenode network at #LHSPodcast. Go ahead and subscribe to our mailing list. The link to that is on the website. You can even buy show merchandise and help support the show. CafePress.com and printfection.com/LHS podcast. You can also help the show by clicking the sponsored ads down the right-hand column. That doesn't cost you anything, except the time it takes to click on the links. Listen to us live every other Monday night, 8 o'clock Central Time. That's 0200 Zulu, early on Tuesday mornings. Our recording schedule and our countdown timer are located on the website, as is all the information you ever wanted to know about our program. Thank you to all of our listeners, live, quasi-live, past, present, and future. We appreciate every single one of you. And we hope you'll tune in a couple of weeks' time for our next episode. You have been listening to episode number 146 of Linux in the Ham Shack. And for myself, Russ, K5TUX, for Pete, VE2XPL, and for Cheryl and the rest of the crew here at the show, I bid you adieu and hope to see you again in a couple weeks' time. Bye-bye.